The gospel lesson for today comes to us from the Gospel of St. Mark, chapter 4, verses 35 through 41. Gospel of Mark, chapter 4, verses starting at 35. On that day, when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd behind, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. Other boats were with them. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that the boat was already being swamped. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him up and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" He woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." Then the wind ceased, and there was a dead calm. He said to them, "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith? And they were filled with great awe and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Fear is an emotion that we could all relate to on one level or the other. We could all look back into our lives and pinpoint a moment or two when we were afraid. Something small, something big, the fear of the unknown, maybe because someone fell sick, or you were in an accident. Fear is a strong emotion. People react very differently to fear. Fear paralyzes some people, freezes them into inaction. They're unable to do anything. Fear can also send people to a frenzy, panic attack. It happens. And they start doing things in a frenzy. So we had a panic attack this week. I was sharing this with Joan on my way back. On Thursday, the day before my daughter's middle school graduation, I was at the hospital at JFK doing my chaplain intern when I received a call around 11:40 in the morning from the school. I hate getting phone calls from schools. So I get this call the day before graduation and I pick up, already trembling, what happened. And they say, "Well, the nurse said, 'This is nurse, I have your daughter in my office.'" And then the fear, it goes a little up. And then she said, "Well, she ate something and she seems to have had some allergic reaction." See, mind you, my daughter does need an EpiPen all the time, and I carry one with me, and there's one at school all the time. And she said, "Well, she was at the picnic, she ate something." And I said, "What did she eat?" "Oh, I don't know," the nurse says, "but she said she drank something and she feels funny." And so she came and I said, okay, give her some Benadryl. It 90% of the times it works. And after 5 minutes, I get another call and I said, she's not doing well. What should I do? Should I do? And I said, give her an EpiPen. And she, I could hear it. And she goes, oh, does she have an EpiPen? And I said, yes, she has an EpiPen. And then she opens it. There is no EpiPen in here. Her name is here. There is only a sample, a tester. And I said, it shouldn't be because I bought one. I gave it. Now you can understand how I'm feeling. I'm far away. And then she says, I'm calling 911. And I said, no, 911. It's me. I am coming. And I just left. That's all I remember. I remember going there, and by the time I got there, they had called the 911, and I could see the ambulance, and I'm not stopping anywhere. I was running, and I'm sure that the people, usually you have to ring the bell, and you have to announce, you have to show your ID, everything. I didn't have time for it. I didn't even think about it, in fact. But they could see that I'm coming, and so they opened the door for me, said that, come on in, and I went, and by the time I got there, she was already on the stretchers. Now my panic was a lot more, but I looked at my child's face, and I realized in the end she was okay. You know, her face wasn't swollen, and she's 14 years old, so I have seen her enough to know when she is really in need of, when I have to be afraid, when she needs medical attention, and I told the paramedics, I'm going to take her home. They gave me a look, though. And I said, it's okay. I know it. I can see it. I see her face, and I will take care of her. It took a little bit of convincing for me to let them take her out of the stretcher, and they gave her to me. I had to write a waiver and all that. Finally, I got her home. So that's a panic attack. And panic, you know, I wasn't thinking about anything right or wrong. I just wanted to get there. But once I saw her face, I knew that it was okay. But fear can lead us into such frenzy. Sometimes it is warranted, and sometimes it's not warranted at all. For instance, about, I would say, 6-7 months ago, I received a call to go visit a young man who needed a visit. And I said, okay, I will go. I wasn't quite sure what exactly. They did not actually explain to me the nature of the young man's need. So I went there, and he was probably in his late 20s or early 30s. And so we kind of did our usual visit talk, and how are you, and all that. He didn't look sick at all, and I said, okay, this is not a sick person, you know, nobody's dying. And eventually, after a lengthy conversation, I learned that he was really afraid of something happened to him. And he said that the previous day of the visit, that he had gone for a walk in his neighborhood, and he came across, as he was walking, he saw a van full of people. The driver was driving rather slow, and he has never met them in the neighborhood, so he was convinced that the people were lost, so he walked over to the van to give them directions. So he said, when he went close to the van, the lady who was in the driving seat put the window down, and this is what he told me. It was a Muslim woman, and she was covered. All he could see was her eyes. And I asked, are you lost? Do you need direction? And he said, she looked at me. And then he said, when she looked at me, I felt it. He felt the fear. He said, I thought she sent an evil to me, and I was scared, so I backed away, and I walked fast to my home, and I could feel it behind my neck. This is what he is saying. And he said he went home afraid that somehow an evil is following him, and that he tried to explain to this to his young wife, and the wife said, you better go to the doctor, because she realized that he's making no sense at all. We know from outside his fear was unfounded because he was afraid because of the unknown. He doesn't know, misunderstanding is there about what they may have heard about things. And eventually he told me that he had watched a YouTube video. YouTube video has power, I tell you. YouTube video a month or so ago about some event that happened somewhere in Pakistan about some Muslim woman that who had looked at somebody and he dropped dead. Mind you, I'm sitting there, it's called the power of suggestion. I'm listening to him and not knowing whether to cry, laugh, whatever. But the truth is, this young man totally was afraid. It was real to him. The fear was real. So no matter whether his fear was unfounded, whether this YouTube was real or unreal, didn't matter at this point. What mattered was that he was fearful for no real reason, actually, except the fact that he has a whole lot of misunderstanding about the Islamic community and their faith and so on. But that really led him to an irrational behavior where he really needed medical help, and that's why he was there. We did have another lengthy conversation about how to get rid of this unfounded fear. But my point is the fear in itself, how powerful it is. I read about Roosevelt once in, I think maybe it was Guidepost and so on, because I wasn't alive at that time, or I didn't know him that well. The story is about the time when they had, we know that he became the president during the Depression. And the little story that they were telling was about his speech, the first speech he made. And you may have read about this, because he said that he stood up, the president stood up, and everybody was afraid those times because nobody knew what to expect. Nobody had enough to eat. Nobody knew how to save their children, how to save their homes or business. People were losing everything. And so there was this big scare ahead of them. And it said the president stood up and said, "There is only one thing to fear, actually. That is fear in and itself." It is not about the future. It's not about the money. It's not about your children. It's the fear factor. And the storyteller said that somehow, or it's a way to look back into the history of how he was able to turn the country around from fear to standing up on their feet and doing what they can to bring the country back up. And he says that when President Roosevelt talked about the fear factor, the only thing you have to be afraid is fear, people were able to think about fear differently. So it wasn't that all of a sudden that money just started falling, that people were able to look at the face of fear and work. So fear, we know, is powerful. And the disciples were afraid in the story we read. They had a long day on the land. And it was evening. There was a big crowd. Jesus was talking to them. And he had gone to sleep. It says there were many boats. We don't know whether all boats were in trouble. But we do know that the disciples' boats were in trouble. They couldn't balance the boat. They should have been able to balance the boat, according to them, because most of them are fishermen before they became disciples. That means they are used to the sea and the moods of the sea, and I'm sure they have had many storms to handle before. So they probably thought that they could handle it on their own, so they let Jesus sleep and did everything they have done before, the tricks they have known They have used before, but nothing worked. The sea was rattling the boat. They were afraid. In the Old Testament, the sea represented chaos, chaotic. There is real fear behind their fear of the sea. And the Old Testament also talks about the sea monsters, like Leviathan. So sea was like a live creature coming to get them. They can't control. They're out of control. Maybe the sea monster was about to devour them. And their fear, of course, was compounded by the fact that they were the fishermen. They should have been able to handle it. But now they can't. They are out of control. So finally, they looked at Jesus, who was sleeping peacefully, woke him up, and said, "Master, don't you care? Don't you care that we are perishing?" Jesus did not directly answer them yes or no, but rather he talked to the sea. "Be still. Be at peace." And amazingly, the sea obeyed. "Wow," they said, "even the sea obeys him. Who is this guy? We've been with him all this time. We've seen things done, but not this one." In Mark's gospel, the disciples always failed to understand Jesus. They failed to see the true nature of Jesus, in spite of the fact that however many miracles that he did. In chapter 3, it even says Jesus gave them authority to go and chase away the demons. And after all that, they still did not know who was with them. The power vested in Jesus. They forgot in whose presence they were in. They forgot who was in control. They only saw Jesus sleeping. They thought that he didn't care. We can understand the disciples in many ways because we've been there many a times when we felt like God is looking the other way. Otherwise, why would it happen to me? Why to my mother, my father, my child, my aunt? Why me? God listens to everybody's prayers. Why not now? Did I do something wrong? What's happening to me? So we can understand the fear the disciples felt as the storm got stronger and they couldn't hold the boat. They forgot that their master, their teacher, was the master of the universe. When fear comes, people become irrational. We do things that contradict our nature. We do things that contradict our Christian nature, contradicts the principles of love and compassion. People of Israel was afraid too. Very afraid. They have always been afraid of the Philistines because they were stronger and bigger. Right now, I'm not going to recount the story because we all know, like Kirsten said, the story of David and Goliath. Who would know the story of David and Goliath, right? Everybody knows the story. But the people of Israel were afraid. Why were they afraid? Because they had forgotten. They have forgotten who brought them from Egypt. They had forgotten who is in control. They had forgotten who they were, the people of God. They had forgotten what kind of God they had. And they were ready to run away on the other side. The big guy is coming. Too big for us to fight. Look at him. None of our armors. We're not going to fight and win this war. He's too big to fight. And then comes David. Right? He was a little boy, shepherd boy. And they looked at him upside down. And he doesn't measure up. Does he measure up? No. And even Saul says, "What are you going to do?" And of course, David gives him his resume. That doesn't measure up either. He says, "I'm a shepherd boy. I kind of killed the lion and the bear one time when they came." But he said something different. He didn't say that I will, with mighty hand, will kill the lion and kill the bear, and therefore I will kill. He said, "The Lord who helped me to save my sheep from the lion and the bear will help me to defeat Goliath the giant. The Lord who was with me then is with me now, and I will go and fight." We are the Lord's army. We are the Lord's people, and he's defying the Lord. And then Saul says, "May the Lord go with you." But he did something else. He said, "Okay, let me at least make you look like one fighter." But it didn't work either, because it says the armor was too big. But David goes just as he was, as a young, vulnerable shepherd boy, going to meet the giant Goliath with a little bag, a sling that is hanging on his shoulder, and a few stones. No fitting warrior, no fitting soldier. But he had something that Goliath couldn't see. So Goliath says, "Hey, look at you coming after me. I could pick you up with my one hand and throw your flesh to the birds and the animals." He ridiculed him. But David wasn't afraid. But David knew that he was not standing alone. And David said, "The God of Israel, whom you have ridiculed, will help me." So all he had to use was one little stone. Probably wouldn't really hurt a fly. But that's all it took. So you and I know, sitting here listening to the story, that it wasn't really that stone that helped David to kill Goliath. It was his faith. It was his faith that he had through the experience of the past, even as a young boy. Knowing that the God has helped him in needs of trouble, in times of trouble, and this time of trouble, that he is not alone, that God is with him, that made David walk into the path of the big Goliath and able to win the war for the soldiers, for the people of Israel. So why didn't the people of Israel believe? Because they had forgotten. You see, it happens to all of us. We do have stories of faith and the times that God has helped us. However, when panic attack comes to us, when all of a sudden we face a troublesome spot, what do we think of first? We are afraid. We want to take control of the things. We want to do the things we have always known. We let our faith slip until nothing else to do. Nothing else is left in our pocket, in our bag to carry. All stones are gone. Then we go wake up our faith and say, oh, maybe we should pray. But you see, the God who is so powerful, the God of the sparrow, God of the sea, the Almighty God is always there for us because we are called to be His children. Like the disciples, they failed to remember who they were. They failed to remember who is in control of their life and their fight against the Philistines, the mighty warriors. Who is in control of your life? What do you do when life throws chaos, unexpected events, sadness into your life? What do you do when you feel like God doesn't care anymore? Do you try to take control of the hem? There is this Chinese parable about a grandfather who was teaching his grandson about inner strength. And the parable goes like this. The grandfather said, there are two wolves inside of us, all of us, which are always at battle. One is a good wolf, which represents things like kindness, bravery, and love. And the other is bad wolf, which represents things like greed, hatred, and fear. The grandson stops and thinks about it for a while. Then he looked up to his grandfather and said, Grandfather, which one wins? And the grandfather quietly said, the one you feed. We have two wolves too inside of us. When life gets tough and the waters are stormy, the enemy looks too big to defeat. With our meager self, we have two options. The fear factor or the faith factor. We do have an awesome God. But which one will you feed? In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.